think this was made for a tall man. Good afternoon, brethren. Well, I'm mighty happy to see you all here. Very grateful for the opportunity to be here. And as I look over the group, I am reminded that last Sabbath we were in Seattle, Washington, and a lot of rain. We accompanied Mr. Armstrong on the trip up on a Sabbath morning and back on a Sabbath afternoon. And I think at that time there was some 2,500 there, and here we have another group of approximately, I would say, somewhere in the area of perhaps 1,500. But this is a special occasion too, and I certainly appreciate those who have come from far and near to be with the brethren, particularly in view of the fact that so many young folk. And I might, before I get too far in the digression, tell you that Mr. Armstrong today will be in San Francisco. As I said, he was in Seattle last week, and he's preparing now for a trip to Europe. But he has not stated and made this statement of the date that he is to be there. However, it's, as I said before, it's a pleasure for us to be here. And certainly, to remain, you would have to warm up the weather a little. I'm certainly not accustomed to this cold weather, but we can make the best of it. Brethren, I don't know whether you realize it or not, but we're approaching the end time. And even as Mr. Armstrong has said recently, it seems as if Satan is out to attack the church again, or let's say is still in the process of working along those lines. We also realize that there is a great need for each individual, since it is the custom and it is the work, the job of Mr. Armstrong, the apostle, to make the church, the bride of Christ, ready for the husband when he returns. And that requires a personal effort on the part of each one of us to make ourselves available, to follow instructions that we, the church, might be found without spot or wrinkle or any such thing. Today, I had a little difficulty in deciding what I would bring you. However, I have decided to give you the history, or will it be somewhat in the order of a Bible study. You know, the type of the Christian today is a very, let's say, awkward position, yet it is vitally important and necessary that the people who are called in this day realize the extent of that calling and what it means. It is, let's say, somewhat of a confused state when you realize that you've got to conform to a certain pattern and your nature rebels against you constantly, yet at the same time you've got to bring yourself under control, complete control. There was a man who in the Old Testament who was very highly esteemed in the sight of the Almighty God, the Logos, the one who became Jesus Christ, and whose father was esteemed as a man worthy of the attention of the Almighty God, but he himself was one who lived a life that was somewhat similar to the life of the Christian of today, of this age. And so I would like to go through that history with you and show you some of the things that we must be, let's say, aware of, because it is a type of the Christian life of today. You know, God said in Jeremiah that he got tired of sinning and repenting, man sinning and repenting, and continuing to sin and repent. Well, this man, we're going to go through and view his life, was one of those who lived somewhat of a difficult life, but he wanted to find out. just exactly what the results would be to titillate the five senses which all of us possess. And so to begin with, I would like to read you a condition, a paragraph that was stated by Mr. Armstrong not too long ago, and it sets the background for this study that we're going into. He says, this world, with all the specter of worldwide famine, increasing amount of crime and violence of all descriptions, the stepped-up tempo of racial conflict, the skyrocketing incidence of pornography and filth, and the breakdown of respect for all law and constituted authority, it should be obvious that this world needs straightening out. And I might add that it's God has chosen you. Those of you who have His Spirit, He has chosen you to, with His Son, straighten out this mess. And it is a mess, believe me. Having gone over a great part of the continent of Africa, having been in England, northwestern democracies of Europe, and then scanning various areas in the United States, I find that this world is in quite a mess. And the more the time goes, the worse it becomes. And I know that you're confronted with these problems. You see them. You know about them. But has it ever dawned upon you that you have been chosen as one to help place this world in a condition so that it can be, after, let's say, 1,100 years, fit for God the Father to come down and make His abode here with us? Do you realize that as one individual, you, that you have been chosen to help straighten out this mess? Well, we have been experimenting and theorizing with solutions to the world's problems for about 6,000 years now. And this recorded history has nothing, let's say, favorable in the sight of God. And what you see is the result of man's endeavors. Yet it's going to take man, and that's you, to straighten out this mess. What is God's solution? What is man's destiny as purposed by his Creator? We realize that the family of God is what is going to take place. And I'd like you now to turn to Revelation, the second chapter, because we're going to join the God family and in ruling this world and later the entire universe. Now that takes in a great deal of something that we know very little, if anything, about. That is so complete. In Revelation, the second chapter, there is a promise here, beginning in verse 26, Revelation 2 and verse 26. It says, "And he that overcomes and keeps my works unto the end." Now that doesn't mean that it'll be this month, next month, but unto the end. That could be a few more years yet. But it's got to be done. "He who overcomes and keeps my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations. And he shall rule them with a rod of iron," verse 27, "as the vessels of a potter shall they be broken to shivers, even as I received of my Father." Now turn over to chapter 3, verse 21. Chapter 3, verse 21. "To him who overcomes will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne." Now, sitting on the throne means that there will be the equal sharing of the responsibility to the rulership. And so we see what God's promise is here. The man or woman who overcomes, who yields to God, masters the temptations and pulls of the flesh, which is a difficult thing to do. In fact, it's an impossible thing for you to do alone. You have to have God's Spirit. You have to have the power of that Spirit in order to overcome the pulls of the flesh. And we realize then that we should have a goal, or set a goal, in order to master our vain and lustful lusts of the human nature. All right, with that then, let's go over to Romans, the 7th chapter. Romans, the 7th chapter. And as we look at this, perhaps we can understand the job that we have to do. Verse 18. Paul here was afflicted with the same things, the same human nature that we have. And he stated, verse 18, "For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwells nothing good." Now it's hard to for us to really conceive that, for the, let's say, the unconverted man to realize that there's nothing good in this flesh. He would sort of smile at that, because every man loves himself. Yet, this is from God's point of view. You as flesh, there's nothing good in you. There's nothing good in me. And until we come to that decision, to that fact, we are deceiving ourselves if we think that we are, let's say, of the flesh and good. Everything, there's good about it. All right, then, let's turn to 1 Kings, the first chapter, third chapter, rather. 1 Kings. Because here we're going to take up the life of Solomon. King Solomon, the son of David. Solomon, as you know, ruled Jerusalem for 40 years after the death of his father, David. And Solomon's life is similar to, as we go through this, is similar to the life of the Christian. And I'm going to point that out, and I want you to look at it. Because we are, this is a type of our Christian life. Nowhere in the Scriptures do you find where Solomon has the Holy Spirit, or had the Holy Spirit. Yet at the same time, God called him out and set him aside. And we have to examine his life closely in order to find what we are doing in this end time, and then correct it. Because we're going to show you how God looked at Solomon's works during the 40 years that he ruled Jerusalem in a time of peace. While David was there, or while David ruled Jerusalem for 40 years, David had constant blood on his hands. He was continuously in war, but not so with Solomon. Not so. And so let us begin with verse 5, chapter 3, the book of 1 Kings. "In Gibeon, the Eternal appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, 'Ask what I shall give you.'" Verse 6, "And Solomon said, 'Thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he walked before you in truth and in righteousness, and in righteousness of heart with you. And you have kept for him this great kindness, that you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Eternal my God, you have made your servant king instead of David my father. And I am but a little child,' he said. 'I know not how to go out or to come in.'" And let me just briefly pause here to say, God must have smiled at that statement, because it was a statement that revealed the fact that he wanted the help of the Eternal to know how to come in and how to go out. It was something that God must have been well pleased with, to hear a physical man declare that, "I don't know how to go in nor to come out." Going on then, verse 8. And your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who was able to judge this, your so great a people? And the speech pleased the Eternal. Yes, it must have been pleasing to him that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, because you have asked this thing, and have not asked for yourself long life, neither have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern judgment, behold, I have done according to your words. In other words, even after Solomon had uttered that, boom, God says, I've done it. I've done it immediately. And Solomon knew that too. And just a few hours later, he knew that God had done exactly what he asked for. But let's go on. He says, behold, I have done according to your words. Lo, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there was none like you before you, neither after you shall any arise like unto you. And I have also given you that which you have not asked for, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto you all your days. Now, verse 14 is a warning that God gave Solomon. He says, and if you will walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as your father David did walk, then I will lengthen your days. And that was a warning. The first warning that God gave to Solomon. The first. And it was very brief. And you'll notice a little later on where he repeated. He gave Solomon a second warning. But he also added a little more. And these are the things that come. God acted as a father here. He knew that David had already said, Solomon had already said, I don't know how to come in or go out. And so he warned him. Just as we are often warned by the word. Not, it's just as if a father would take a little son, a little child, and say, well, now look, I'm telling you this for your own good. Don't do that. You'll get hurt. Come over here and let's go this way. All right? Now, he says, if you don't do that, Daddy will have to spank. All right, so God just gave him a little warning as to what would happen. And that was it. Let me repeat that. And if you will walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as your father David did walk, then I will lengthen your days. All right? Now, in order for you to know what was necessary for him to rule, you will have to know the laws that were laid down for a king. And God had also specified these things. Let's go back to the 17th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, because these are the laws whereby a king is to bear in mind as he prepares to rule the nation of Israel. Let's begin with verse 14. This is Deuteronomy, the 17th chapter. He says, when you come into the land which the Lord your God gives you, and shall possess it, and shall dwell therein, and shall say, I will set a king over me, like as all the nations that are about me, you shall in your wise, in any wise, set him king over you, whom the Eternal, your God, shall choose. One from among my brethren shall you set king over you. You may not set a stranger over you, which is not your brother. But he shall not multiply horses to himself. I want you to note this particularly. He says, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses. For as much as the Lord has said unto you, you shall henceforth return no more that way. So he didn't want them carrying on commerce with the nation of Egypt. And he specified this. Egypt had the best of horses, they had the best of chariots, they had the best of merchandise that would be needed by the nation of Israel. So he set down certain laws, because if you go back there, I brought you out of sin, you know the boundary, the slavery that you were in, I brought you out of that, I don't want you going back. He had a reason for so saying. And so he warned Solomon, don't go down there to carry on commerce with those people, because it will lead you from me. It will drive you from me. It will separate you from me. So verse 17 says, neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart be not turned away. Neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. And it shall be, when he sits upon the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write him a copy of this law in a book, out of that which is before the priests, the Levites. And it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Eternal his God, to keep all the words of this law and these statutes to do them. That his heart be not lifted up above his brethren, and that he turn not aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left hand, to the end that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, he and his children in the midst of Israel. So now there were the laws that God laid down for the king. And he expected the king to abide by these things. He was to read the book of the law daily. He was to conform to the no-nos that the Eternal had enumerated for him. He was to understand that in order to be successful in ruling his people, there were certain laws that he had to abide by. And so, these were laid down to him, and he read them. He looked over them. He studied them. But at the same time, he also recognized, too, that there were certain things that his flesh desired. And the pulls of the flesh are difficult to withstand. The pulls of the flesh are no different than we have here. The five senses, the eyes, the ears, the smell, sense of taste, touch and feel. They're the same. They're difficult. And Solomon, as we will see, was able to withstand some things, but yet not able to withstand others. Solomon's rules and the provisions. He had total peace. Let's go back to 1 Kings, the 4th chapter. And let's begin with verse 20. 1 Kings, the 4th chapter, and let's begin with verse 20. Judah and Israel were many, as the sand which is by the sea in multitude, eating and drinking and making merry. And Solomon's reign over all kingdoms from the river into the land of the Philistines and these others, they brought presents and served Solomon all the days of his life. All the days of his life. Now look at verse 23 or 22. Solomon's provision for one day was 30 measures of fine flour, and this tells you the food that he had daily. He was a king. He was treated as a king. Verse 24, for he had dominion over all the region on this side of the river, and he was actually in a position to know exactly what was to be given, and his servants, he treated them royally. All right? And Judah and Israel, verse 25, dwelt safely, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, from Dan even to Beersheba, all the days of Solomon. So people lived well. They lived highly. They lived off the fat of the land, and God blessed them tremendously. All right? Let's go down to verse 29. And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men. And then it names those who were famous for their wisdom in the country of Egypt, also Philistia, and surrounding territories. Look at verse 32. And he spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. In other words, he was internationally famous for the songs that he composed and also the songs that he wrote. He was a botanist. He knew animal husbandry. He took care and studied the flora and fauna, that is, the vegetation as well as the animals. He was wise in all of these exploits into which he plunged himself. He was also a politician. He was a very shrewd politician. And so we find, verse 33, and he spake the trees from the cedar tree that is in Lebanon, even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He spake also of beasts and of fowl and of creeping things and of fishes. And there came and all the people to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all kings of the earth, which had heard of his wisdom. Now let me also tell you that it was the custom in those days when one king, he knew of one man that was in greater and more highly esteemed than himself, was to take the best of his harem and make a present to that king as he brought him. He would have his girls, the virgins, so that they would be absolutely exquisite and prized very highly by the king, the owner. And he would take these girls, these virgins, in and present them to the king, who himself would place them in his harem. And so, you see, this was being done as various kings visited Solomon because of his wisdom, and he was esteemed to be the wisest king that they had ever known, that they ever knew of. His exploits went around the then known world, and he was well known for the wisdom that he had and that he executed. All right? Look at verse 34. Let's go back to 1 Corinthians. Hold your finger there and this. Go back to 1 Corinthians. I just want to remind you of something that will help you to understand the situation here. In verse 26, you know what Paul wrote in the church at Corinth there? He realized that the church there had all the gifts of God. They were people who were rich in the spiritual gifts, but yet they had a great number of problems. And so Paul reminded them of those whom God had called. In verse 26, the 1 Corinthians, the first chapter, it says, "For you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty men after the flesh, not many noble men after the flesh are called." God didn't call the wise, the mighty, and the noble in this church, in this age. He didn't call those. But let me tell you, the gift that he gave Solomon was a gift of wisdom, a gift of understanding, a gift of knowledge. But it was given Solomon for a specific reason. And that's what we must realize. God here hasn't called the wise and the mighty and the noble of today, because it is through his power that he is recognized as the giver of life, as we go on and we can readily see. So let's go back to 1 Kings now. And let's take in the fourth chapter, and in verse 26 and 28, the three verses. And this is an insert. This is just thrown in here to show you exactly what took place. Verse 26 says, "And Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots, and 12,000 horsemen. And those officers provided victual for King Solomon and for all that came unto King Solomon's table. Every man in his month, they lacked nothing. Barley also and straw for the horses and dromedaries brought they unto the place where the officers were, every man according to his charge." It doesn't tell you where they came from, but it's inserted there to let you know that all of these things didn't happen at one time. They happened periodically in the life of this man. But let's go on. Let's turn back. Hold your finger there. Let's go to Ecclesiastes, the book of Ecclesiastes. This was also, this book was written by Solomon. And it tells you something about his tests, his enjoyment, the things that he wanted to prove to himself to find out just how much pleasure he could derive through the five senses. Let's begin with verse 1. This is the second chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes, written by Solomon as he went through this particular period of testing the five senses. He says, "I said in mine heart, go to now, I'll prove you with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what does it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was the good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made great works, I builded houses, I planted vineyards, I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees of them all kind of fruit." He says, "I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that brings forth trees." He says, "I got me servants and maid servants, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possession of great and small cattle, herds of prized cattle." He goes on to say, "Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I also got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments." In other words, I gathered together choruses and vast orchestras with the idea of playing music that would be lovely to hear. And as you go through these things, you'll find that the five senses here are titillated, that he might be able to get the maximum joy and pleasure. Drinking of fine wines, oh, it is delicious, particularly as you serve the meal, seven-course meal, and you have a wine for every course. And it actually, you have a neutralizer that you use between wines that will neutralize the taste buds so that you can enjoy so much more so the next course. He did this purposely so that he could find out exactly what there was in wines or strong drinks. This was his pleasure. He says, verse 8, "I gathered me also silver and gold." Well, you go back and you remember some of the laws laid down for a king to abide by. This was not supposed to be, because you see, God would give to him those things which God desired him to have. But it says here, "I gathered me also silver and gold." Yes, we'll come to the history of the man pretty soon who was sent out on expeditions purposely to bring in silver and gold that was mined in the mines of other countries where these metals were found. But Solomon sent ships down purposely to gather things of this type. He says, I got me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of man as musical instruments and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than they were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. Now why would he interpret it that way? My wisdom remained with me. If he didn't realize that he had indulged in some things that were prohibited, but yet his wisdom remained with him. Have you ever experienced that same thing where you know you've done wrong, yet God has blessed you? You know you have. I have. This is written. And this is written for our learning. It is also a warning to us as you go on and see the steps that were taken, step by step by step, and realize that the interpretation is something that you must delve into, that you must make the most of in order to be able to clean up your lives to comply with the request that has been made by the God the Father. He says, and whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought and on the labor that I had labored to do. And behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit. And there was no profit under the sun. Yes, it goes to show just exactly how things were going on. Going on then, verse 4:12. And I turn myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that comes after the king? Even that which had been already done. So he says, then I saw that wisdom excels folly as far as light excels darkness. Wisdom excels folly. He says, as far as light excels darkness. I hope you get that. The wise man's eyes are in his head. But the fool walks in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happens to them all. Then said I in my heart, as it happens to the fool, so it happens even to me. Now if he was to call the other man a fool, what would he call himself? After going to excess to find out just what would be the limits to overindulge in the drinking of wine or the eating of food, or the many, many women that he had, and so forth. What would it be? Verse 15, then said I in my heart, as it happened to the fool, so also it happens to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, that was also vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than that of the fool forever. Seeing that which is now in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. So the flesh is going to be discontinued. And he found that out. He says, therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. So he hated himself. He hated life. He had indulged in everything that he could think of. And what was left? What was left? When he got to right down to counting the cost, he found that, well, all of these things I can enjoy no longer than the body lasts. As soon as the body dies, I'm through. Well, doesn't that happen to the fool? Certainly it does. Wisdom, the wisdom of God, brought him to that conclusion. All right. So the exploratory adventures. Solomon had set himself above law in his ambition to surpass all the monarchs of the East in magnificence. He wanted to surpass them, and he did. He had the wealth to do it. All right? Chapter 5, then, let's go on, beginning with verse 6. This is in 1 Kings, chapter 5 and verse 6. Now therefore command that they hew cedar. Now this is an agreement with Hiram, as verse says, and Solomon, verse 2 says, this is chapter 5, Solomon sent to Hiram saying, you know how that David my father could not build an house unto the name of the Eternal his God for the wars which were about him on every side. Verse 4, but now the Eternal my God hath given me rest on every side, so that there is neither adversary nor evil occurrent. Verse 6, now therefore command you that they hew me cedar trees. Here, this was the agreement that was being made with Hiram. And he said, command this, and my servant shall be with your servants, and unto you will I give hire for my servants, according to all that you shall appoint. For you know that there is not among us any that can skill to hew timber like unto the Sidonians. So here was an agreement that Solomon made with Hiram to go into these countries and bring him back servants so that he could work with them. And Hiram made the contract. He had a contract with David, his father. So he says, I'll take it up with you too. I will supply that which you want. Because he had ships, he had a fleet of ships at the service of Solomon. And so this was agreed upon. And verse 7 says, it came to pass when Hiram heard the words of Solomon that he rejoiced greatly. And he said, blessed be the Eternal this day, which hath given unto David a wise son over this great people. And then Hiram sent to Solomon, saying, I have considered the things which you have sent before me for, and I will do all your desire concerning the timber of cedar and concerning timber of fir. And then verse 11, Solomon gave Hiram 20,000 measures of wheat. This was the payment for the service that was to be rendered, and 20 measures of pure oil, and gave Solomon of Hiram yet year by year. So he supplied him with that was necessary for him to live on year by year. All right. Now let's go down to chapter 6 and verses 37 and 38. Naive in recognizing that God would okay this particular thing. In verse 37, chapter 6, in the fourth year was the foundation of the house of the Eternal laid, in the month of Ziph. And in the 11th year, in the month Bull, which is the 8th month, there was the house finished throughout all the parts thereof. This is a temple that Solomon built for God. Now he says, so was he 7 years in building this temple. But look at verse 1 of chapter 7. But Solomon was building his own house 13 years, and he finished all of his house. So he spent 7 years in building the house for God, but almost twice that long building a house for himself. It showed a very selfish attitude, and God looked upon it just like that. 13 years in building his own house, but 7 years in building the temple of God. Solomon should have known better, but you see, he was busy with other things. And so, that was the way this went. We find also that as Solomon was in building his own house, there were rooms made for various wives that he had. One was the daughter of the Pharaoh that was given to him. And so there had to be some exquisite work done in order to comply with the demands made by the various women. And so this too was working, as you can see. The dedication of the temple is one that is really a marvel. Here is where Solomon prayed for the entire peoples of Israel. He was very laborious in pointing out various individuals who, when they turned their face toward Jerusalem, that God was to bless them. Anything that they desired as they repented of their sins and then turned and asked the Eternal to forgive, certainly he was to forgive. Solomon pled for them. Let's go to the 8th chapter and begin in verse 22. Solomon stood before the altar of the Eternal in the presence of all the congregation of Israel and spread forth his hands toward heaven. And he said, Lord God of Israel, there's no God like you in heaven above or in earth beneath, who keeps covenant and mercy with your servants, who walk before you with all their heart. This was a sincere prayer, let me state. It was a prayer that God did not turn his head from. He looked upon Solomon because Solomon was absolutely sincere as he knelt down and prayed. And this is what reminds us so much of today's prayer. When you have sickness in your family, you get down on your knees and you cry out to God for relief. And God answers. Yet you'll get right up and go do something that you know is contrary to what you should do. But yet God hears. When your baby is sick, and you call for the elder to come and anoint your child because that child is there suffering and you know it's suffering. It can't explain what's wrong. Yet you trust God to heal that child because God has made the promise. And you'll get right up and go out. When you see that the child has improved, his health has improved, you go out and you'll commit sin. That's the reason I say that this man's life is certainly a type of the Christian of today, sinning and repenting. Yet when he prayed, God knew that he was sincere in praying. Not only for himself, but for the people as a whole. This is the king over a nation. And God heard his prayer. Verse 24, who has kept with thy servant David my father that you promised him. You spake also with your mouth and have fulfilled it with your hand as it is this day. Therefore now, eternal God of Israel, keep with your servant David my father that you promised him, saying, there shall not fail you a man in my sight to sit on the throne of Israel, so that your children take heed to their way and they walk before me as you walk before me. He's asking God, don't forget the promise that you've made my father. There is to be someone sitting on that seat. You promised David, and he's going to look for it. I'm going to look for it. I expect you to do it. And God honored that prayer. He honored that prayer. Look at verse 28. Yet have you respect unto your prayer of your servant and to his supplication, O Lord my God, to hearken unto the cry and to the prayer which your servant prayed before you today, that your eyes may be open toward this house night and day. Don't forsake it. 24 hours a day we expect you to have your eye on this house. Verse 29, he says, my name shall be there, that you may hearken unto the prayer which your servant shall make toward this place, and hearken you to the supplication of your servant, verse 30, and of your people Israel, when they shall pray toward this place, and hear you in heaven, your dwelling place, and when you hear, forgive. Forgive. Because that's the custom. That's what is expected. That's what is desired. Verse 31. If any man trespass against his neighbor, and an oath be laid upon him to cause him to swear, and the oath come before your altar in this house, then hear you in heaven and do and judge your servants, condemning the wicked to bring his way upon his head, and justifying the righteous to give him according to his righteousness. That prayer was heard by the Eternal. Yet in Solomon's own house, he had more than one woman. Yet, as Solomon dealt with the commerce of the day, he sent men down into Egypt to bring back prize horses, prize horse flesh, as well as chariots made by hand. And he knew that he was instructed not to do that. Yet at the same time, he expected God to honor his prayer. In your life, I have done the same thing in my life. And that's the reason why we say as we go through this, be aware of the fact, this was a wise man whose actual books that he wrote, some of those books are included as the canon of the scriptures. The book of Proverbs was written by this man. God didn't ignore the fact that there's much wisdom in the Proverbs. Many of your attorneys, many of your judges in the Supreme Court of the United States, read the Proverbs daily for wisdom. This man was given a gift of wisdom. And they study that. It has been taken as a part of the canon, a part of the things to help us to go right. We must realize that. But still at the same time, he was dealing in sin. And he knew it. Remember, we know it too. We know what sin is, a transgression of the law. And we read the law of Solomon, the law of Kings, which was the law of Solomon. We read that. Solomon was to read the law every day. I don't know. It isn't recorded whether he did or whether he didn't. But he knew the law. He was aware of it. Even as we are aware of God's law. Realize that. And so we must go on. As we see the many things that were done during this period of time. Now let's go to the very first verse of the ninth chapter. And it came to pass when Solomon had finished the building of the house of the Eternal and the king's house and all Solomon's desire which he was pleased to do, that the Eternal appeared to Solomon the second time, as he had appeared unto him at Gibeon. And the Eternal said unto him, I have heard your prayer and your supplication that you have made before me. I have hallowed this house which you have built to put my name there forever, and mine eyes and mine heart shall be there perpetually. Now, it's just like a father talking to his son now. His second mistake has been made. He says, and if you will walk before me as David my father walked in integrity of heart and in uprightness to do according to all that I have commanded you and will keep my statutes and my judgments, then I will establish the throne of my kingdom upon Israel forever, as I promised to David your father, saying, there shall not fail you a man upon the throne of Israel. Now, remember the first one that we read, the first warning? It doesn't contain this next passage, which says, but, verse 6, if you shall at all turn from following me, you are your children, and will not keep my commandments and my statutes which I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel out of the land which I have given them. And this house which I have hallowed for my name will I cast out of my sight. And Israel shall be a proverb and a byword among all people. That was the second warning. But it was a warning, that's all. It went unheeded. No. Solomon didn't keep that was necessary to be kept. He did not obey the Eternal as he should have. All right? Look at the 10th verse. This is in chapter 9, the 10th verse. And it came to pass at the end of 20 years, 1 Kings chapter 9, when Solomon had built the two houses in the house of the Eternal and the king's house, Now, Hiram, the king of Tyre, had furnished Solomon with cedar trees and fir trees and with gold, according to all his desire. But then King Solomon gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. Now, Solomon realized that Hiram had served him, and had served him well. And so he says, I'm going to give him 20 cities, but look. Verse 12 says, and Hiram came out from Tyre to see the cities which Solomon had given him. And they didn't please him. You know why? It was a slum area. Here's a friend, and look at what Solomon, look at what Hiram said. And Hiram said, verse 13, what cities are these which you have given me, my brother? He says, I've served you well. I've done for you as I did for your father. And then you give me this dump. I'm just exhausted. I just can't understand. The more I do for you, and then this is the reward that I get, my brother. He added that, you know, to sort of emphasize the thing. No, Solomon was looking out for himself. A very selfish nature. A man whose wealth could not be counted. A man whose wisdom, unparalleled. A brilliant man. A smart man. Made so by the eternal God. Yet at the same time, it was something that surprised Hiram. He says, and he called them the land of Cabal, that is, slimy cities. A ghetto, in other words. That's what he gave him. All right, let's go on down again to the 19th verse of this same chapter. And all the cities of store that Solomon had, and cities for his chariots, and cities for his horsemen, and that which Solomon desired to build in Jerusalem, and in Lebanon, and in all the land of his dominion, and all the peoples that were left. And he names the six cities. Also, verse 21, their children that were left after them in the land, whom the children of Israel also were not able utterly to destroy, upon those did Solomon levy a tribute of bondservant until this day. So Solomon actually did exploit the people here to a certain extent, and we realize too that that was something that he should not have been and should not have done, but yet he did. In verse 25 we read, and three times in a year, do you know about that too? It's a feast, the three feast seasons. Three times in a year did Solomon offer burnt offerings and peace offerings upon the altar which he built unto the Eternal, and he burnt incense upon the altar and was before the Eternal. So he finished the house. So Solomon kept the feasts. He obeyed God in many things, but then he continued to enwrap himself into the things that God told him he shouldn't do. And that certainly is similar to the things that we ourselves are engaged in. All right, let's go down to 26, verse 26, 10th chapter. And Solomon gathered together chariots and horsemen, and he had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horsemen, whom he bestowed in the cities for chariots and with the king of Jerusalem. And the king made silver to be in Jerusalem as stones. And cedars made he to be as the sycamore trees that are in the vale for abundance. And Solomon had horses brought out of Egypt. I remember the admonition that was given. And horses brought out of Egypt, and linen yarn, for the king's merchants received the linen yarn at a price. And a chariot came up and went out of Egypt for 600 shekels of silver. That's a lot of money. But nevertheless, he ordered those chariots to be brought up and sent for them together with the horses. And he had cities set aside for the many thoroughbred horses that he brought up from Egypt. Also the chariots, magnificent chariots, lavishly furnished. He says, repeating verse 29, and the chariots came up and went out of Egypt for 600 shekels of silver, and an horse for 150. And so for all the kings of the Hittites and for the kings of Syria did they bring them out by their means. This way he presented his horses and chariots to various kings around the then nations, and it gave him special esteem in their sight because of the value of the property that was given to them by this so wealthy a king. All right. So we see that Solomon chose the ideal of peaceful wealth and material aggrandizement rather than military glory. Remember, there was peace in the 40 years of this man's rule over Jerusalem. All right? He carried on a great trade with Egypt and with Phoenicia. Now, let's go see exactly where we were a while ago in Romans, the 7th chapter. Because here again is what Solomon was fighting, the same as we're fighting. The only thing, he didn't have power as has been given to us, power of God through the Holy Spirit. Let's begin with verse 14. This is Romans 7, verse 14. For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. For that which I do, I allow not. For what I would, that I don't seem to be able to do. But what I hate, that I do. Solomon felt the same way because he was fighting carnal nature, just as we fight it. Just as we struggle against it, he had the same struggle. If then I do that which I would not, I consent unto the law that it is good. Now then it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, we read this a while ago, dwells nothing good. And so here was a man who had all of the reasons for doing things as God directed, but yet he had followed the pulls of the flesh. All right, now let's go back to 1 Kings, the 11th chapter. This is the summary chapter of this man's life. This is the thing that actually compiles the sins and lays bare the wounds. Verse 1, but King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, and Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Eternal said unto the children of Israel, you shall not go into them, neither shall they come in unto you. For surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love. And he had 700 wives and princesses and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. Now, I have a very interesting job, a part of the job, at headquarters. I deal with all the divorce and remarriage problems in the church around the world. They all come in to headquarters. There are only two of us working on those problems, Dean Blackwell and myself. And I have learned the wretchedness that's in the lives of many who are in God's church. Mr. Armstrong stopped us a few weeks ago from working on those because he wanted to review the process, the manner in which we were using God's law to help us in making decisions and actually giving the proper status of the problems that come from South Africa, from Australia, from New Zealand, from the Philippines, from Canada, from the northwestern democracies of Europe, from England, all brought in to headquarters to determine the status of individuals. We're working with our young folk to try to get them to see that it makes no difference how long that you've gone with a person, dated a person. It could be 2 years before marrying that person, yet after the minister finishes his discourse, telling you that God says this marriage is bound until broken by death. They never hear it, just blows over their head. They're on cloud nine up here. They don't hear what the man says. Yet, as soon as he carries her across the threshold, they're two strangers. Two strangers. Because they thought that, let's say, that they have discussed all of the, to find out whether they were compatible. They thought they had covered the field. They hadn't covered the field. They hadn't even begun. Because he snores and she says, I can't live with him. And he says, she burnt the beans. I can't tolerate that. Now, you'll laugh. I know it's made that way to sort of break, you know, the tension. But still at the same time, friends, let me tell you. Solomon had 1,000. One is plenty. He had 1,000. So you know he had problems. No way possible for him to resolve those problems. No way. When you get two women, one coming from one side and one coming from the other, if you get in a situation like that, you've lost. You can't win. Absolutely impossible. And as I go over these problems daily, I can spend no more and won't spend any more than 5 hours per day. It's a wretched situation that our people who have been gifted with God's Holy Spirit are living in daily. And they come to God's ministers wanting to know, am I free to remarry? Well, after all that you've gone through and you want to get untied so that you can remarry? How foolish! But the surprising part of that is, when you nail right down, when you nail it down, you'll find so many who are unconverted. Unconverted. And if they can't have their way, they leave the church disfellowshipped and then go out and marry whoever they want. 6 months later, come back almost crawling on their knees, asking God to forgive them. But now, there's a child on the way. The mother says, I can't be bothered. The father says, it's not my fault. Just as much her fault as it is mine, so let her keep the child. God's people. What I'm saying is, for those of you who are not married, you want to heed. Have the minister to go through that, let's say, promise or that vow that you've made. Have him enumerate that vow, every word in it, before that ceremony, so that you'll have some idea of what he's saying. Because the institution of marriage is ordained by God and God only. And when you get into an agreement like that, into a vow of that type, it is not to be broken unless it is by death. For those of you who have been married 30, 40, 50 years, I congratulate you. God does too. Because that's what he wants to see. But we have some who have been married for 25 years who want to break it. Let him go his way, I'm going my way. It's a wretched thing. But it's something that we need to consider. It's something that we need to desperately consider. Because our young folk are looking around. They have been brought up into some of the homes where both profess to be Christians. And I don't put that in quotes. I mean it. Christians, followers of Christ, and can't get along. Can't get along. Don't speak to one another. Oh yes, I'm living in the same house. But we haven't spoken for 3 weeks. 3 weeks? And you're eating the food that she cooks? Yes. How do you know? She's a poison.
You got more of a faith in her than I would have. These are, they sound foolish, and they're just as foolish as they sound, but nevertheless,
that's the condition. That's the condition. And I hope that you understand what I mean. I hope that you do. But I'll stop the digression because I could be here all evening, but Solomon preached to midnight, didn't start till sundown. It's all right. Let's go on now to verse 3. And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods. And his heart was not perfect with the Eternal his God, as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the goddess and Zidonians of the Zidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine taking your son up to offer before a god? Wood, iron, or stone, whatever it may be. And that child be covered with a sheet. And then plunged as a sacrifice to the God there that your wife is serving. You have built the temple to this God. And remember, these were not followers of the God of Israel. These were from foreign gods, other tribes, who had to sacrifice to their gods. Can you imagine offering your child to God of that type? Especially when you knew good and well what your God, the God that you're supposed to serve, had told you. Nevertheless, Solomon did evil, verse 6, in the sight of the Eternal, and went not fully after the Eternal, as did David his father. Now I want you to look at that word fully and realize that if you are not submitting yourself before the Eternal God in every way that you possibly can, then you are in this category. You are not fully serving the Eternal, and that's what he commands. He demands it. Nothing less. Fully serve him. That's the only way that you'll make it, friends, and we haven't got a whole lot more time left. There just isn't. And the apostle is very, very, let's say, concerned. As he has often said, I don't know how much more time I'll have here in this life. Only God knows. He repeats that over and over again, as we realize that these are difficult times. And even after I came in here Tuesday, I had to return to headquarters because there was an emergency there. I came in Tuesday night, I left Wednesday night to go back to headquarters because there was a meeting that next morning at 9 o'clock, a meeting of the council. Difficult times are here upon us. We don't realize it. But nevertheless, that's true. After the meeting and taking a plane to come back out here to be here today, got in yesterday morning at 6 o'clock. Emergencies. And he said, there may be a special meeting. Let me know where you are. All of us. On call 24 hours a day because times are up and he wants advice from that advisory council. Just as God has an advisory board. Yes, the four living creatures, the 24 elders. created by the Eternal for counseling purposes. You must realize that. And so likewise did he for all the strange wives which burnt incense and sacrificed unto their gods. And the Eternal was angry with Solomon, verse 9, because his heart was turned from the Eternal God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice, and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods, but he kept not that which the Eternal commanded. Wherefore the Eternal said unto Solomon, for as much as this is done of you, and you have not kept my covenant and my statutes which I have commanded you, I will surely rend the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant. Notwithstanding, in your days I will not do it for David your father's sake, but I will rend it out of the hand of your son. Jeroboam was his son. Howbeit, I will not rend away all the kingdom, but will give one tribe to your son for David my servant's sake, and for Jerusalem's sake, which I have chosen. But yet, look at verse 40. Things had piled up. Things had come to such a head that he even thought of killing his adversary. Solomon sought therefore to kill Jeroboam. And Jeroboam arose and fled into Egypt under Shishak, king of Egypt, and was in Egypt until the death of Solomon. Then he was able to return. All right, friends, I think that you've got the picture. But let's go back now to the book of Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter. This was written in the latter years of this man's life. Scripture doesn't say whether Solomon repented or not, but this seems to be a man who's reflecting on his past life. This seems to be a man who realizes the error that he has engaged in, and he's thinking about. He's thinking about the younger people, and so he gives this advice as we go through here. Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter, beginning in verse 1. Remember down thy Creator in the days of your youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw near, when you shall say, I don't have any pleasure in living. There's no pleasure anymore. So he says to the young folk, look, remember your Creator while you're young. He says, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. He says, in the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened. In other words, your eyesight is beginning to leave. You got plates, you know, dentures, things you can't see too well. You can't hear too well. When the birds sing, they awaken you. This is old age. It's old age. When the keepers of the house, your legs get weak. I know some of those things now. And I am aware of the fact that I am now on borrowed time. And I realize as this was written, I think he recognized things too. But you have to realize that these things are real. And as he gives this warning, issues the warning here, it helps us to recognize the fact that if we're not straight, we'd better be getting straight. Because tomorrow isn't promised. You don't know. Many people who kept the Feast of Tabernacles last year will not be there this coming Feast of Tabernacles next year. They won't be there. In fact, one dear friend of mine left the feast. He never got home alive. But he did complete the feast. He was happy. He was happy. But we must realize, friends, when you hear the word and you realize that you are in that category spoken of here by this man who was chosen of God and whose life actually is a type of the life of the Christian of today, if we're not in within the circle, the area of safety, then realize that you could be left out, completely left out. Remember the area of safety in the old world? That was the ark. The ark was the only place of safety for the people in that world. Realize the church is the ark of today. Outside the church, you can't get salvation. You get salvation within the church. It is the ark of today. And if you expect to be saved, you better stay in the church. People are finding that out, but they're still pondering whether I should return or not. Too much pride. What do you mean, too much pride? Too much pride to humble myself. Well, we better be thinking about it, because there's no other area of safety. None. Only in the church. And so we must realize that. Going back then, verse 5, also when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets. Or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. This depicts life. Life, when the cistern runs dry, that's all, death occurs. When the crystal pitcher is broken, life, the water, just goes to waste, goes out. It doesn't have any more knowledge. It doesn't have any more means of communication. Life has left it. Has left the body. And that's it. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, with the preacher, or says the preacher, all is vanity. And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yes, he gave good heed and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find out acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, even words of truth. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, so which are given from one shepherd. And furthermore, by these, my son, be admonished. From making many books, there is no end, and much study is awareness of the flesh. But here is the conclusion of the whole thing, and I leave it with you. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments. That first word, fear, fear God. I wonder if you really fear the eternal. If you really fear the person who is able to give you life. There are two types of fear, you know. The fear that we're speaking of here is reverence. Reverence unto the eternal. Reverence to God, the creator of heaven and earth, the high tribunal of the universe. Are you aware that only life comes through Him? And He has chosen you. He has picked you out of a world of people and set you down to where He feels. He knows that there's some quality of leadership that attracted His attention. That's the reason why He chose you. That quality of leadership that you have in you, every one of you, have some quality of leadership. And that's the reason why God chose you. And He's giving you the opportunity to become, as Paul says, to have part in the better resurrection. The first resurrection. where you will be able to, with Christ as our head, rule the earth with a rod of iron. Having gone through the problems that God has purposely given you, that you will be able to help others who will have the similar problems that we're now encountered with, that we're now going through. You will be able to help that person who has the same problem that you have. He'll come to you expecting you to help him. And as God, you will be great. You will be of great help to that person. You will be anxious to put that person back on the right road. You'll be able to succor that person, to nurse him along, to have the patience to work with that person. So why not do it now? Why not make up your mind to do it now? As he says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God. Reverence God. Know that he's there to help you. And keep his commandments. For this is the whole man. Not in part, but this is the whole man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. And our day of judgment is today, not tomorrow, today. Knowing this then, I hope that you will make your calling and election sure. In the 8th chapter of this same book, let's turn back a few pages. Now this may be, let's say, a help to some people. But verse 11 says, because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Judgment by God was not speedy with Solomon. And it isn't speedy with us either. We know that when we sin, we know we must repent in order to have freedom. However, because that punishment doesn't come on us speedily, sometimes we extend our sin, our life, our indulgence in sin. We extend that time. For what reason? No more than it titillates the senses. We have a temporary pleasure, but it's a pleasure that doesn't last. It's a pleasure that won't last. It's a pleasure that will condemn us, because we could die before making the change. And that's the purpose in our life. That's the reason why you have God's Holy Spirit, that you may make the change from the carnal mindedness to being spiritually minded. And that's our goal, friends. I appreciate the being here. I'm going to terminate that by getting ready to indulge in tonight's affair. And I want to thank those of you who did come for distances around. I hope that this has helped you to understand just why we are called and what our purpose in life is. I also hope that we'll be able to come back at another time. I'm certainly very appreciative of the fact of the invitation that has been extended. I also realize that our time is very, very short. I hope that you have understood the point that we're trying to get across, and that a change will be made so that you will be accounted in that number who are, as members of God's church and in a collective body, be able to meet our husband when he comes for us, that we will be even as God has demanded, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing.